This is Jay Sekulow. The House Intelligence Committee has a question. What did President Obama know about Trump surveillance?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Everybody, welcome to the broadcast. Before we get started, let me say this. We're going to get into some very serious issues, but I can't ignore, and I don't want to ignore, the passing of the great legendary evangelist Billy Graham. This is an individual in U.S. history that's had a mark, and certainly in our generation, and Jordan Logan in your generation, and before. This is Billy Graham met with kings, queens. He met with presidents, but he also met with you and me right there in those stadiums around the globe. And he crossed every denominational line. I mean, this is someone that reached that was when the word evangelist, and we got Andy Economo here who's fluent in Greek. The word evangelist
right
in Greek is
evangelistis,
which means
he who preaches the gospel.
And there is the perfect definition of a man whose life was dedicated to exactly that, preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Our prayers and thoughts are with Franklin Graham and the entire Graham family and all of the other extended members of that family as well. But we know Franklin well. We've worked with Franklin for many years. And I'll tell you something. This is someone, Billy Graham's had a big impact on all of us.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I would say for at least in my generation and those of us in our mid to late 30s, probably had an opportunity, and you may have, where I bet a lot of our audience did, attend at least one or two of the Billy Graham events, the large stadium events. I think you've been to them.
I went to
it
one.
It was the time of decent talk.
Yeah, in Atlanta, the early 90s.
Yeah. I mean, so
my wife went to one, the last one,
in New York.
2005 or so, I believe.
New York City.
Yep, New York City.
The effect that it had on my, you know, grandparents who have passed away, my parents, me.
Your great-grandparents.
I mean, yeah, you're talking about generations of impact that he had. That's just talking from one family. I'm sure we could all share these stories, and many people would be doing that this week. But I think to underscore what you said, Dad, is not only was he speaking to us, but he was counseling literally the leaders of the world through some of the toughest times, like the Vietnam War, the fall of the Soviet Union, people who really needed that guidance at times that were under tremendous pressure. And Franklin has done a great job in Samaritan's Purse, but you know, you don't replace people exactly. And Franklin wouldn't have wanted to do that, and
yep.
Reverend Graham wouldn't have wanted his son to have to field to do that either. So he'll be missed. We don't have that same kind of feel, and he's been missed for years now.
Yeah.
Again, a long life, 99 years old,
well lived, and served the world, and true word of the evangelist. It was very simple, the way he defined himself. He defined himself as an evangelist. That's what he was. He also reached over, I mean, and you know this, I mean, he reached over every denominational line. You're a Greek Orthodox. He reached over Orthodox, Catholic.
Right.
He would, anybody that was there, he was talking to.
You know, the thing is, his style of preaching, very aggressive, very fiery, we used to call it fire and brimstone, is not the Orthodox, or for that matter, the Roman Catholic way of preaching the gospel, but we nevertheless were mesmerized by him, watching what his events were called crusades.
Right.
That's what they were called.
Yep.
He was bringing the cross to people, and to watch him call people down and to receive Christ.
Yep.
Come in from your place in the stadium right now and receive Christ, and to hear that voice of George Beverly Shea singing that hymn that was singing, Just as I am, come before thee.
I won't sing it.
That's not, again,
Bev Shea could sing it.
Those are not Orthodox hymns, but nonetheless, we were very moved and transfixed by those.
There was something else about him, Logan. He used contemporary... He would contemporize his...
Yeah, even if he didn't necessarily understand everything that was going on within media, what was happening, especially in the Christian youth culture, especially in the 90s, was willing to embrace things that a lot of people were not willing to embrace to reach people of all ages. And that was the first time we experienced it. It was, like I said, in the early 90s, the Georgia Dome was the largest indoor event for a long time until the record was broken later on. It was at the Billy Graham Crusade. Like I said, my wife worked on the final crusade in New York, was able to spend a little bit of time with Billy Graham, so very impactful in our lives. Give us a call if you want to talk, 1-800-684-3110.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in the centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
All right, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Devin Nunez has sent out a letter to about two dozen people, former Obama administration officials, some current Trump administration officials. The letter says, "Enclosed, we find a series of questions regarding the information contained in the Steele dossier, which was funded by the Democratic National Committee and Hillary for America, the Clinton campaign, and used in a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act application targeting Carter Page. Please provide complete written responses as soon as possible, no later than Friday, March 2nd. If you do not provide timely answers on a voluntary basis, the committee will initiate compulsory process." Then you look at the letters, the questions, and I want to just focus on number 9 first, and that is, what was President Obama briefed on any information contained in the dossier prior to January 5th, 2017? Now, that's very soon. We want your reaction to all this. To the idea that this letter's out there, and we're going to let you know what we think's going on here at 1-800-684-3110. But, Jordan, you pointed out during the break the importance of that January 5th date.
That's right. On January 5th, we talked about it. That was one of those emails uncovered that Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor to President Obama, emailed herself the day and the moment, actually, that President Trump was being inaugurated. I mean, he was literally about to take the oath of office when the email was sent. She only sent it to herself, CC'd one staff member, and what it did was it memorialized this meeting on January 5th with Jim Comey, President Obama, Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates, who was the Deputy Attorney General at the time, and Susan Rice. The meeting was about Russia, Trump, we know specifically, and in that meeting they discussed whether or not they should share all the info they knew about Russia with the incoming Trump administration. Now we're talking about January 5th, that would just be 15 days before that administration was coming in. So I think that's why that's a key moment, that there is a belief, even though Susan Rice denied it, because there were two meetings that day. There was a counterintelligence meeting before that other meeting. I think Susan Rice used the kind of legal language through her lawyer. Likely the dossier probably came up in the counterintelligence meeting before.
Yep.
And then there was a separate meeting. So that's why Nunez in the memo ends it on up to January 5th. So all these dates, very important as you read through what is a very simple letter with very simple questions to answer.
Yeah, but there's the big one.
But there are parts that matter. And listen, it's not just President Obama. I mean, this I'm sure went to, we don't know exactly who. We know it went to many officials, top Obama and Trump officials. It will be very interesting to know how they choose to respond, because it will show the breadth of the dossier within the Obama administration, how many people at the highest levels knew about this.
But I think it's significant, Than, that the focus on that, at least question number nine, was President Obama briefed on any information concerning the dossier prior to January 5th, 2017? So I asked you this during the break, but what's the reaction on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think there's a general consensus that they have accepted that President Obama at least did know about it on January 5th. And you know, here's why I think that's true, because tomorrow was the original deadline for Susan Rice to respond to the House Intel Committee about that exact meeting that Jordan was talking about. So I think, this is my speculation, but I speculate that they are in possession of information that at least in one of those meetings, President Obama did know about the dossier. Now they're reaching back to anyone else who may have been in this realm, and they want to know how far back that knowledge went. So I suspect you're talking about James Comey, Jim Clapper, John Brennan, Sally Yates, on down the list you go. And Jay, you're right. I think question nine is the key one. When did the president know? But when, if he did know, who else knew? And are they still there? That is eventually where we're driving towards.
So, Andy,
here,
as you look at these questions and the significance of these questions, what is it telling you as a former prosecutor?
It tells me, as a former federal prosecutor and a current state prosecutor, that what the chairman of the committee is looking for and the committee is seeking is to determine whether or not there has been a corruption of the federal judiciary. That's the heart of what this is about. You go and make an application to the FISA court for a warrant to do surveillance on this man, Carter Page, and you put in that warrant application, which has to be in an affidavit form, a sworn statement, information that you know to be false, fraudulent information that was obtained by this spy for MI6, being paid by the Democrats and Hillary Clinton and so forth to put this together, and you're corrupting a federal judge to rely upon information that is knowingly false. And he's asking some serious pointed questions. The first one, when and how did you first become aware of any of the information contained in the dossier?
And the reason that that's significant is because we're still trying to piece together exactly how and exactly the way in which the information from the dossier was put together and how it was shared. And there's gaps in that as far as what we know on the public record. The question, though, is when you say when and how did you first become aware of any of the information contained in the Steele dossier, if this is to intelligence officials, they want to know the involvements, for instance, Jordan, of Bruce Orr,
right,
of Fusion GPS, of potentially Senator, I mean, wasn't it Senator McCain that
Senator McCain, delivered, right? I don't think it. This is just necessarily about, this is not just about Democrats. Now, this is about administration officials specifically, but we don't know exactly who received this. We do know that it's not just Obama officials, that also Trump officials. It could also mean that Republican offices like Senator McCain's, because that's already publicly known that he was sharing this dossier information. So the relationship there, again, answering these questions, what'd you do with it? Come to believe that it was funded? Did you know it was funded by a Democrat alleged entity? I mean, I think at a certain point we should just go through each question because they kind of walk you down the path to that key one, question nine, when it directly goes to President Obama.
I want to stick on question one here and go to Than on this. When and how did you first become aware of any information contained in the Steele dossier? What do you think Nunez is looking for there?
Well, keep in mind, this actually piggybacks on exactly what Jordan was saying. We know that a number, not a few, but a number of former and current officials signed off on those applications. So, Jay, I think what Devin Nunes is trying to get at is, did any of those officials know about the Steele dossier when they signed off the application? And it's really a catch-22 because, of course, they had to know about it because
right.
It was in the application, so they can't deny it. But if they knew about it at the application, then what Andy's saying comes into play. That looks like an attempt to corrupt the federal judiciary.
I'm going to play Nunez's statement about why the letter's released, but let me encourage you to call us with your comments. How do you feel about the fact that now questions are being asked about what President Obama may have known? 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Here's what Devin Nunez said.
One of the things that we did today is we sent out a questionnaire, and we're asking several former and current officials to answer 10 simple questions. And these are questions that the public not only should know and have a right to know, but I think they want to know. And that is, when did you learn about the dossier? When did you learn that it was paid for by the Democrats? When did you learn that this was a political piece? I mean, these are all questions that we should be able to get answers to.
Now, there was also questions already submitted, though, Than, to Susan Rice, right?
That's right. And the deadline for her responding was tomorrow. And Jay, when you go down some of the questions that were asked of Susan Rice, they're very, very similar. They're, when did you first become aware of it? Who else did you share it with? Did you instruct anyone? Did you have a conversation with Mr. Comey? Did you have a conversation with President Obama? So, Jay, I really do think that the committee is now probably in possession of at least some responses for her. And now they want to compare it with the other people who were involved here.
So, Jordan, what do you think that points to? I mean, the fact that they're going this deep. Because let me read question two.
Yeah.
In what form or forms was the information in the Steele dossier presented to you? By whom? Please describe each instance.
Yeah, well, that's the, I think, Bruce Orr question right there. How did you know, did your wife give it to you? Did Christopher Steele give it to you while you're having coffee, even though it was outside of your mandate as a associate deputy attorney general and what he was in charge of, which is drug trafficking specifically? Who was handing it to who? How did you receive it? This is, again, key, and it describes each instance. So did you get it multiple times through email, through actual hard copies? Did it come through FBI? Did it come through DOJ? Did it go right to the White House? Did it go through the NSA?
I mean, was it the dossier itself?
Yeah. Did you actually get the real dossier, the full dossier?
Right. So Andy, I'm looking at the second question here, and phone lines are starting to jam up. So again, 1-800-684-3110. We've got a couple open for you. When it says in what form or forms was the information in the Steele dossier presented to you and by whom, this to me is the predicate act. They want to know how these members of intelligence community, former staffers, whatever they might be, how they received the information.
Right. Did you get it on paper? Was it orally transmitted to you? Did you get a synopsis of it? Who gave it to you? And what form did it take? I think those are the things that are that he wants described, so that we can know exactly what the substance of it was. You got to go back to what was the form that you got it in.
Yep.
Yes, because wasn't it people like John Brennan and Clapper who both said they didn't have any idea about this and didn't know it.
Let's get that sound.
I mean,
we have that sound.
And so I think one thing is certain from all the reports is that certainly the former CIA director John Brennan and the former director of National Intelligence James Clapper are likely being addressed in this, because they both made statements about it saying they had no knowledge, or they may have said they saw it when it broke in the, it was leaked, you know, to BuzzFeed. And again, they were saying that on talk shows, but now they're getting asked by the House Intelligence Committee.
Yep. All right, Logan, we got taking a break here.
Yeah, back in 30 seconds. If you're watching online, we continue our show. We don't go to breaks. We keep going. So you can find us online, facebook.com/JSeculo, Periscope and Twitter @JSeculo. Phone lines are completely jammed right now. They'll open up. Also get your comments related to this topic in on Facebook. We'll take some of those on the air. You can find all that information at aclj.org. But again, 1-800-684-3110. Phone lines have just lit up, but a lot more will open up, so you can give us a call.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're talking about this 10-question questionnaire that went out from Devin Nunez's office. One of the question nine of which is, was President Obama briefed on any information contained in the Steele dossier prior to January 5th, 2017? Professor Harry Hutchinson, our director of policy, joined us and was just barely getting into it during the break. But let's do it for our radio audience. So, Harry, your analysis of this 10-page question, or 10-question, it's one-page questionnaire, 10 questions, what's your sense of what it is?
Essentially, there are two fundamental questions. First, what did President Obama know about the Russia dossier, the Christopher Steele dossier that has been used as a basis for a FISA warrant? And the second question is whether or not the course of justice was perverted through the issuance of a FISA warrant without fully disclosing the factual basis connected to the application for a FISA warrant. And keep in mind, that led to the surveillance of American citizens. Essentially, we have surveillance, arguably without probable cause, in violation of the Constitution. And so it's very, very important.
Andy, you're shaking your head.
Yes, I'm absolutely in accord with what Harry just said. I mean, what we're doing, this is so fundamental and it's so dangerous. You go before a U.S. district judge and you want to get a warrant under the Foreign Surveillance Act to surveil American citizens, and you've got documents that are purporting to give you the basis to do it that are based on lies or false statements, or that have been fabricated and concocted. And the judge, relying upon what the person who is standing in front of him is saying, issues a warrant to spy on Americans. How serious is that?
No, I think it's very serious. All right, we got calls coming in. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. So let's go ahead and take a phone call.
Yeah, let's go to Danny in Staten Island on line one. You're on the air.
Hi, Danny, go ahead.
Yes, you know what I really find amazing? I was listening to an interview last week with Trey Gowdy, and the guy said he was stepping down because he wanted to spend the last third of his life enjoying his family, because he knows that at the end of the day, that probably nothing's going to happen. But these people, it's really amazing how they don't fall under the RICO Act. They've all colluded with each other to commit crimes. The average guy can't even beat a parking ticket.
Yeah, but you know, when you're talking about RICO, though, racketeering influence in corrupt organizations, I've litigated those cases at the Supreme Court in the United States. This doesn't follow that kind of pattern or practice that would be a RICO thing. I think and let me go to Than on this for a moment here, and then I want Jordan to comment as well. To me, as I look at the questions, like number three, who did you share this information with? When and in what form? Please describe each instance. Nunez is trying to find out how this information about the Steele dossier was obtained by individuals that are being questioned, in what form, and then who they distributed it to.
Well, and the timing is important, Jay, because did they obtain that information before or after Chris Steele was terminated and suspended as an FBI contact and informant?
And remember why he was terminated as an FBI contact, because he was leaking information to the press,
which they view as the most egregious of violations for sources, and it disqualifies him from being a source. So, Jay, on the timing portion of that, if one of the responses that Devin Nunez gets is, I was first made aware after he was suspended as a contact, well, then if they then shared that information up the chain and eventually it made its way into the dossier, that would be wholly inappropriate, because the FBI as a whole had already made a determination that any information from this source was not credible. So that's where the timing comes in. And again, Jay, reaching out to 20 individuals, they're going to have to respond on their own. So if their answers don't line up, it will be very revealing.
I want to play John Brennan's questioning. He was questioned by Trey Gowdy. What was his position at this time? What was he, the DNI?
This is last year, so after he was out.
He was no longer the DNI. He was no longer the Director of National Intelligence. This was after it, but he was questioned on this very issue of the Christopher Steele dossier. Take a listen.
Director Brennan, do you know who commissioned the Steele dossier?
I don't.
Do you know if the Bureau ever relied on the Steele dossier as part of any court filings, applications, petitions, pleadings?
I have no awareness.
And Brennan was actually the CIA director at the time, right? Was previously the CIA director.
Yes. Yes, John Brennan was CIA director. I mean,
last position was the Director of National Intelligence. He had also been with the CIA as well.
Okay. I mean, what I'm saying is in these responses, specifically, what we have to understand is that the way he answered it is not.
I have no awareness.
I have no awareness. Do you know who commissioned it? I don't. I mean, that question is a little bit so open-ending that you could probably say that if you didn't know as much as we know now, because commissioning it, well, there was a law firm that was connected to the Hillary Clinton campaign and the
originally
DNC.
Originally Republican funding.
There was some Republican funding. I mean, so that question's not answering anything. And then do you know if it was ever relied on? And he's asking about the Bureau. So I'm guessing there the Bureau is the FBI, not the CIA, to any court filings. Yeah. He says he has no awareness. Now, in his positions, that would be bizarre in light of how important those filings would be because they're related to a presidential campaign.
It seems like to me, Harry, that that's what they're trying to get to. Because, for instance, you look at who do you share the information with, and the fourth question, what official actions did you take, the individual being questioned, as a result of receiving the information contained in the Steele dossier? That's very pointed.
Absolutely. But it's also important that there's still a, let's call it an 11th question that we need to have an answer to. Was there an attempt to unofficially disclose information? Keep in mind that during the waning days of the Obama administration, Loretta Lynch and James Clapper, they expanded the dissemination of raw signal intelligence. So it's very, very possible that some of the information, which ultimately was used, perhaps relied upon, was disclosed and disseminated unofficially as well. So I think this letter from Devin Nunes scratches the surface, but there's more beneath the surface that we need answers to.
So, you know, I'm looking at it, and I'm saying this is good to start just trying to put you're trying to put the case together of where this went and how it was handled. I mean, that's really what this is about. So, Andy, looking at it, both of us looking at it as prosecutors, you look at it and you say, okay, the next question, the fifth question, did you convene any meetings with the intelligence community and or law enforcement communities as a result of the information contained in the Steele dossier? That's a very calculated, direct question.
Yeah, it is, and it's very simple to answer. Did you convene any meetings with the intelligence or law enforcement as a result of information? In other words, did you get together and talk to intelligence and law enforcement communities as a result of what you saw? That's a very simple answer.
And we know they did, because we know there was a meeting on January 5th.
Correct.
We know that Susan Rice made a memo of it on January 20th. We know that James Comey was there. We know that the president was there, the vice president was there, others. Susan Rice, obviously. So these are important questions being asked. All right, we're coming up on a half-hour break, so we're going to be here for another 30 minutes. Let Logan tell you how you can make sure if you're not getting the entire broadcast, you need to. We'll take more of your questions at 800-684-3110, but
that's right.
Let everybody know.
We do have another half-hour coming up on Jay Sekulow Live, so if you want to join us, you can find us broadcasting live, facebook.com/JaySekulow, Periscope and Twitter at Jay Sekulow. And at ACLJ.org. You can also find us archived later on in the ACLJ app, film the App Store. That's if you have iPhone, iPad, Apple TV. We also have our channel, the Roku Channel Marketplace. Just search for ACLJ and you'll find it right there. And you can also subscribe to the Jay Sekulow podcast, Jay Sekulow Live podcast on iTunes. Find it by just going to iTunes and go to your podcast app, type in Jay Sekulow Live, boom, subscribe, it'll come to your phone each and every day. As you said, we do have a half hour left. That means we have open phone lines, so 1-800-684-3110 to have your voice heard. That's 1-800-684-3110.
We've only gone through half the questions. It's five more to go. A lot more to discuss, including the big question. What did President Obama know, and when did he know it? We'll be back with more in just a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, ACLJ.org.
broadcast. So Devin Nunez has sent out to 24 people. We don't know exactly who those people are. That information has not gone out yet. But they are former Obama administration people, and they are former individuals that are, or people that are currently with even the Trump campaign or within the Trump organization. When I say organization, I'm talking about the White House, not the company. And we went through the first five questions. Let me summarize those. And again, by the way, if you're just joining us, our thoughts and prayers with the family of Billy Graham. I've sent condolences and our prayers to Franklin, who we're very close with, and expressed to all of our listening audience as well that the prayers are with his family at Billy Graham. What a great – and he said something very important here. Let me say it again, because I know like on KKLA, some of these other stations, you're just hearing us now. Billy Graham defined himself as an evangelist. That's the word he always used, evangelist. We happen to have a Greek scholar here with Dr. Economo, and the word evangelist in Greek is?
Right, evangelistis.
Which means?
He who preaches or proclaims the gospel.
Which was exactly what Billy Graham's life was.
Right.
He was the preacher. And a life well lived, an impact. Everybody on this that's talking to you right now, we've all been impacted by the ministry of Billy Graham. All right, we're going to go to the Nunez questions. We've already talked about when and how did you become aware of any information contained in the Steele dossier. They want to know how this information got out. In what form is the Steele dossier presented to you? In other words, former Obama administration official, did you get the dossier itself? Was it other kind of documentations? Who'd you share the information with? Well, we know Christopher Steele decided to share it with the media. But who else did you, people being questioned, share this information with? What official actions did you take as a result of receiving the information contained in the Steele dossier? And that's important. I'm going to go right to Andy, and Andy and I are going to be are exactly in sync on this as former prosecutors. Here's why that's important. What official actions did you take as a result of receiving the information? So what did you do officially when you received the information? And the truth is, they went and got a FISA warrant.
Right, that's exactly what they did. They got the information. In other words, when you got it and you received this information, what'd you do with it? In plain, simple English, what did you do with it? I took that information and I incorporated it into other information, and I went to the FISA court, to a federal judge, and I applied to get a warrant to spy on an American citizen.
I want to ask our audience this, because there is a question number nine. Was President Obama briefed on any information contained in the dossier prior to January 5th, 2017? We know why that date's important. We'll discuss that in a moment. But do you think President Obama was aware of what was in that dossier? And what do you think President Obama did with it? I'm curious to see what the audience has to say. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Because remember, the day after that January 5th date, January 6th, James Comey, who was at the January 5th meeting, he went up, that he was at the meeting with President Obama, and met with President-elect Trump and told him about the dossier. So let's not forget that. I mean, that's the way it exists. That is the reality. So we'll take your calls on that at 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way that these questions flow will, and the responses, and again, saying that we will subpoena you if you don't answer these. So, I mean, you know, you have to testify. We're giving you the option to do it in a written form. We know that this went out to at least two dozen officials.
Yep.
I think the reason why you may read in a lot of the reports Obama and Trump, because there were like the Andrew McCabe types who stayed on into the Trump administration as well. So they could be on here. There are bureaucrats who serve both administrations that would have had high-level positions. Peter Strzok is an example, still at the FBI. Bruce Orr, still at the DOJ. So he is technically in the Trump administration now. I don't think it's implying that it's the top people that are the closest to the president and are real supporters of the president, if you will. It's the people who stayed on as bureaucrats or as appointees until they were replaced. And so this, to me, gets at the heart of how much it wasn't just Hillary Clinton's campaign paying for Oppo research, but it was the Obama administration weaponizing that opposition research into legal warfare, into what we call lawfare. So it wasn't just negative ads. By the way, none of those ever ran about this dossier. It was how was this ultimately used, as we know it was, at least in the FISA matter involving Carter Page.
All right, we're going to come back from the break, and Logan will take calls.
That's right. You can give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We have a video coming up at the break, a tribute to Billy Graham. So if you're watching online, you'll get to see that. It's coming up right now on Jay Sekulow Live. Again, 1-800-684-3110.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. During the break, I just told Professor Hutchins I've got a complex question for our director of policy. Hillary Clinton famously said in regards to the Benghazi matter, what was the source, what difference does it make? So when I look at questions like this, when did you first learn of or come to believe that the Steele dossier was funded by the DNC or the Hillary for America campaign, what difference does it make?
Well, it makes an essential difference because someone officially or unofficially decided to withhold relevant, pertinent information from the FISA court. And so it's very, very important to get an answer to that question. When did you first learn or come to believe that the Steele dossier was funded by a Democrat-aligned entity? That's an essential fact with respect to the court issuing the warrant. And intelligent people would realize that you would want to withhold that information from the court if you could get away with it, because otherwise the court might decline to issue the warrant.
Andy, so it's shaking his head.
Yeah,
let's get a call ready. No, you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's like going up and saying, Judge, I want to get a warrant on Carter Page. I want to get a warrant to spy on an American citizen. But let me tell you, before I do that, that part of this information is contained in this dossier put together by a former British spy. But that information was funded by an entity aligned with the Democratic Party. And you need to know that, or by the Hillary Clinton campaign. You need to know that before you issue the warrant so that you can put that in the totality of circumstances relating to whether or not there's probable cause or whether there's a reason perhaps that you might not want to. Well, that's not what they told that judge.
You realize the FBI wrote none of this documentation, and the Department of Justice did nothing. They literally used Oppo research from a law firm paid for by the Hillary Clinton's law firm, and they used Oppo research, and they put their stamp on it, and they gave it to a judge. And I think that's why we're seeing so many unique things happening in the Flynn case, because the way this has been handled from the very early stages of this FISA is, you know, you learn in law school these fruits of the poisonous tree can take down entire cases. I mean, even if people who usually would have been found guilty, but if things were mishandled to the point where you were illegally taking this to, and violating all the rules of procedure, I cannot imagine, even in FISA, because this was their third attempt. So they tried twice with their own info. You realize that. And their own info was so weak, the FISA court denied them twice. That never happens. So they had to go and find somebody else's info and put their stamp on it. So the FBI couldn't do enough information to get their own FISA warrant. They had to use Oppo research from Christopher Steele, who paid Russians to get it.
I mean, right.
Hey, Russian collusion.
Oh, there you go.
All right.
From Jordan Sekulow. Let me add that we'll take a phone call now.
All right. Let's go to Kathleen in Maryland.
Hey, Kathleen.
Kathleen, you there? Oh, we went to go to Kathleen. We went to Walter in Chicago. Walter, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hello. Hello, Jay and everybody else. I just want to say that I'm from Chicago, very liberal area, and I watch you guys.
Thanks.
Or listen to you guys and follow Hannity. The thing is nothing's coming out of this stuff. The mainstream media is not covering this. And I'm getting to the point I'm ready to give up because there's no charges. This stuff's going on. You guys are finding stuff every day, and no one says a word about it.
Look, you got to have – this is the wheels of government. Van Bennett, our director of government affairs, will tell you, and I'm going to ask him to tell you that now. Move slowly. So you've got to have patience. Look, we can't say nothing's happening. We took on the IRS and beat them back in a way that they've never been beaten before, both monetarily and injunctions. That's number one. Number two, what have we uncovered with some of our state department FOIAs? Breathtaking. And people are going to be held accountable. And there are investigations going on. And by the way, Walter, it's important for you to understand that there could be investigations going on right this very moment. And under normal protocol, you and I would not know that. Because that's the way it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be announced on the street. But Dan, go ahead.
Well, Jay, I don't think it's moving fast enough for any of us, but I actually strongly disagree with the caller. I think the fact that James Comey, Andrew McCabe, James Baker, and Jim Rubicki are no longer at the FBI, I think that is great progress. Now, don't get me wrong, Bruce Ohr and Peter Strzok should no longer have a job either, so we've got progress to make. But again, to underscore the conversation that you've just been having with the guys, the American citizen that we're talking about, that they obtained a warrant to surveil on, Jay, he did not get the opportunity to be in that courtroom and present this side of the case. It was the obligation of the FBI to do so, and it is our job to make sure that anyone who failed to do that is eventually rooted out. It will take time, but we're going to keep on it until it happens.
Yeah, so I think, look, don't run out of patience here. This is how it works with government. We've got to take our process and respect the process.
And judges in courts right now are really starting to take a look at this. I mean, we heard in the Mike Flynn case, this kind of unprecedented sua sponte, but the judge in his case said the exculpatory evidence wasn't released.
Well, you better
properly,
hand it all over.
And so it needs to be handed all over. So that they're again, these prosecutors, whether we're talking about DOJ at the time through FBI and the dossier going to FISA court and then now special counsel, remember a lot of these people were shifting over. We know with Strzok and that. They were actually shifting over, so they served in both, and these judges are starting to question what they submitted to the judges as fact, and whether or not, because in these unique situations, because it involves so much counterintelligence, the defendants got the exculpatory information. And in the FISA case, as Stan said, that's the most extreme, where we put the most burden on the government. And have to put the most faith in the government that they will present all of the evidence to the judge, including that this was from opposition research only and was not verified at all and could not be verified by the FBI. And in fact, the only other source that reported on it was a source that Christopher Steele leaked to himself. I mean, if they had told that to the judge, I think it's FISA warrant denied. For the third time on
Carter so,
Page.
Yes, I do. I think at that point the judge would have said, "What are you trying to do here? Why are you coming to me with information that you didn't give me prior to this time?"
And now I look, and nothing's happened to Carter Page. I mean, four FISA warrants against this guy for a year. He was under this heavy surveillance.
Yeah. Well, you wonder if they really were surveilling. Action. Were they surveilling Carter Page because they wanted to find out about a Carter Page?
No.
Or Harry, were they surveilling Carter Page because they wanted to find out about, say, a presidential candidate?
Well, I think it's you've hit the nail on the head with your last comment. I think the real question, in addition to the issues raised by Jordan and others, is the following one. The FBI and the Justice Department were under an affirmative obligation, at least in my opinion, to disclose Bruce Ohr's relationship with Nellie Ohr, and then also to disclose Nellie Ohr's relationship with Fusion GPS
and Christopher Steele.
So at the end of the day, All of the evidence amassed by the FBI and the Justice Department was indeed corrupt. And then we can look at Christopher Steele. He did not have direct knowledge with respect to the allegations contained in the dossier.
No,
he is supposed to be able to affirm that he has direct knowledge. There was zero direct knowledge.
No, but they used that report from Mike Isikoff, which is a report based on the dossier that Christopher Steele did, and Isikoff has gone on publicly and said, all I was doing was reporting on the dossier. So they were having evidence verified by other evidence that was the same evidence verifying the same evidence. It was circular.
Hearsay on hearsay.
Yeah,
trash
double hearsay.
On trash.
Yeah, so that's the real problem. All right, Logan, you want to take a call before the break here?
Let's go to Nancy in California and give us a call as well, 1-800-684-3110.
Hey, Nancy.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I don't know if you remember or not. A while back, Judge Napolitano kind of got a spanking on Fox for saying that he had heard reporting that it wasn't from the NSA, the FBI, CIA, but Obama went through the GCHQ, which is, I guess, the British spying agency, and got all of this wiretap information. Has anything gone with that?
I don't know anything about that, and what that would really mean is that a foreign intelligence agency, in the case of the British, MI6, whatever it might be, communicated. They would normally communicate with our intelligence community.
That wouldn't be weird.
And that would not be unusual. That would be, in fact, you'd want that to happen.
What's weird is that you use a former MI6 official who's paid for by the Clinton campaign, who goes over to Russia and pays Russians to put together a dossier because you got two of your FISA warrants denied, so you couldn't listen in on the Trump campaign. And then you use that dossier, as Andrew McCabe said, it was the only basis for their FISA warrant and the only way they got it. Again, I mean, it reeks. This whole thing reeks. The Flynn issue reeks. The way that this has all been handled by the FBI and DOJ seems like disastrous style prosecution.
All right, we're going to be here for another segment. Logan's going to let you know how you can get your questions answered or comments in.
That's right. You can give us a call, 1-800-684-3110, as we head to the final segment of the day. This is the time to call. We have a few lines open. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You can also get your comments in online. We'll take some of those during the show and during the break. That's at Facebook and on Periscope and on Twitter.
Don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. And as Logan said, last segment, we've got a couple lines open for you. 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. Back with your calls in just a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Hey, I asked this to Than during the break, but let me get it. I want to have our radio audience here, too. So the letter, which has the question about, was President Obama briefed on any information contained in the dossier prior to January 5th? Then the last question is, did you discuss the information contained in the Steele dossier with any reporters or other representatives of the media? If so, when and to whom? The interesting thing here, Than, though, is it's, I want people to understand who is the letter from. It's signed by Devin Nunes. It's on the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence letterhead. What does this mean?
Well, it's from Devin Nunes in his capacity as chairman, but it's only from Devin Nunes, the chairman. It's not also from Adam Schiff, the ranking member, which sometimes it is, Jay, if they can come to an agreement. But Adam Schiff clearly did not want these questions to go out because he did not sign this letter. And, Jay, there's really only one conclusion there. I think that there's probably some nerves on that side of the aisle about whether or not the respondents to these letters will have contradictory answers. And the one example I would give, John Brennan. Okay, he says he didn't know anything about it. Well, what if one of the other recipients says, well, yeah, I sent it to John Brennan, or I received it from John Brennan.
Yeah.
That would cause a little bit of problem for John Brennan.
Jordan has a little John Brennan issue going on right now.
This is John Brennan when he's not under oath back in February of this year, talking to Meet the Press about the dossier. Sounds a little different. Byte 24.
I was unaware of the provenance of it as well as what was in it. And it did not play any role whatsoever in the intelligence community assessment that was done, that was presented to then-President Obama and then-President-elect Trump.
Well, you know,
that's completely that's wrong. A lie, because there was a FISA warrant issued because of the dossier. So Andrew McCabe said that. Made that
By
clear.
The way, James Comey made this. Remember, he made the same lie. James Comey made the statement to the president, don't worry, you're not under investigation. Don't worry about this dossier. It's salacious and unverified. Right. Meanwhile, he used it to already get the FISA warrant, and they were about to use it again to get it renewed.
Yeah.
So this is the way the intelligence community was gathering with this.
Surveilling American people in a process where we are supposed to be rare. And only when those Americans have been, you know, decided to have basically given up their citizenship because they are now serving foreign agents as like a spy.
Yeah.
And the only basis of doing that to Carter Page, to then listen in on the rest of the Trump campaign, officials that may have been contacting him, and not just listening, by the way, we're talking about full surveillance, was a dossier that they all act like. I mean, listen, John Brennan said in that bite, I didn't know what was in it. Really? I mean, the CIA director did not know what was in it. He was unaware of where it came from, so it just popped up into thin air, and then it wasn't used for anything. But we know that, and it was presented to President Trump, so we also know that. I mean, these are all people trying to protect President Obama. I think that that is crumbling because they got a FISA warrant on it. I mean, what did they think? They could get a FISA warrant and still act like no one knew about it?
Yes. Harry, I think that's exactly what they thought.
They're not so smart.
That none of this was going to come up. Then they're not so smart, right?
Absolutely. And the evidence that we now have available shows that the FBI and the DOJ, under the Obama administration, they were politicized and they were weaponized against the American people.
Yep. Yep. All right, let's take a call, Logan.
All right, let's go to Kathleen in Maryland online, too.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hi there. My question is, do you foresee the administration implementing a government-wide reform agenda pertaining to the bureaucracy in Washington?
You know, so I think there needs to be. I think you got to do it agency by agency because it's not. I think some institutions are capable of self-correcting with the right kind of leadership. I think other agencies are institutionally incapable of self-correcting. So I think it needs to be an agency by agency, whether it's they have that government Office of Government Innovation, and they're trying to do those kind of things, but it's very hard to move these bureaucrats around.
The problem is that you can't start there right now. You have to first get rid of all of the problems before you can even start innovating, or else you're just building bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy. I think until you can get rid of the incompetency in the bureaucracy, I mean the people, until you can fire people, then just creating more bureaucracy is not good. You can innovate all you want, have ideas, but guess who's going to be carrying it out? The same bureaucrats who can't carry out the old ideas. So until you can, I think part one, President Trump's opening salvo was this FBI director was no good, okay? And so he fired him. And Democrats, Hillary Clinton says no good, Democrats say he's no good, Republicans say he's no good, and then a special counsel got appointed. That tells you how tough it is to take on the swamp, and that's a political appointee. Imagine what it's like to take on the bureaucracy. So my message to all of you who feel this way is you better stand up for President Trump in these fights and his administration, because they are coming under assault daily by the kind of people who would take a political party's opposition research into a secret court to get surveillance on you.
Yeah.
That's who they're fighting against. Good. In the government. And so you better be standing up for your president and his administration, because they are under attack daily to try and do what you want so desperately, to drain the swamp, to get rid of this bureaucracy that's under control, out of control.
Andy? I think that's very well said by Jordan. You better stand up for a president who's trying to drain the swamp. And unfortunately, he doesn't have the ability to do it with a bulldozer. He's doing it with a teaspoon, because that's the way it works. Otherwise, he would have cleaned it out. But they're so entrenched and they're so determined. Jay, I think one of the important questions here, number 8, when did you first become aware that the dossier was used to obtain a FISA order on Carter Page is the second most critical question after when Obama knew about it, because that's the question that goes to the heart of when did you lie or know that there were lies being made to a federal judge to obtain a spy warrant.
Yep.
That's very important.
Remember what happened. If you're the federal judge that issued, if you're the FISA judge that issued this warrant, and they try to bamboozle you on this, which is what they did, I'm sure you're not a happy judge. And this is not the way the system of justice is supposed to work. And especially with something as sensitive as a FISA, you know, you think about it, it's a FISA warrant here. I mean, what can be more sensitive than a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant? And yet they were so cavalier with all this.
Absolutely. But it's also important to note that generally FISA warrants are routinely issued by the court.
But on this one, they had
but
trouble.
But the FBI and the Justice Department, they had difficulty. They had difficulty because they didn't really have a case. There was zero probable cause based on any rational examination of the evidence.
Because unless you're violating some specific sanctions on some specific Russians that exist and entities, it's not illegal in the United States to do business with Russians or to travel to Russia. If you do so properly, you get a visa from Russia. I mean, there's flights daily from multiple airports in the United States straight to Moscow, straight to St. Petersburg. And all of our major corporations, for the most part, including social media, have got offices there.
Yeah, Van points out something else, and that is current officials serving in our government right now signed off on those renewals.
Well, Andy's point, when did you first become aware that the dossier was used? Well, was it before the most recent authorization? Because officials currently serving in the agency signed off on those renewals. So if they knew that it was used, Jay, that is a major problem.
Yeah, like the official who oversees the entire Russia investigation.
Correct.
Rod Rosenstein. Rod Rosenstein signed off on this. Okay, so he knew about the dossier. And what did he know about it? Did they fool him? That's a possibility that the FBI was trying to fool and not let them know the origins of it. But that then goes to the heart of a real FBI problem if they were not telling people how they got this info.
Well, I think we'll learn more, but I think it's going to be weeks. This is not decided in minutes. This is decided in weeks. Logan's going to let you know how you can stay engaged with us through the rest of this week and also through the time. I'm not going to say weekend yet. We're not there yet.
Halfway there. I wish. Facebook.com/JSeculAclJ.org. You can also give us a call each and every day, so keep that number in your phone, 1-800-684-3110. Download the ACLJ app, subscribe to the Jay Sekulow podcast, support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that by visiting aclj.org with great updated news and blogs every day. Talk to you tomorrow.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.